Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is episode 83 of the Van Hemlock Podcast. Hello there.
We've been playing games and we feel that we should tell you about that.
Absolutely, because you need to know.
We know that you'd lose sleep if you weren't entirely happy that we were leading fulfilling gaming lives.
Yes. Well, shall I start?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay, let's talk Lord of the Rings then. Skirmishes. Yes, I finally had to go at the Mirkwood. Well, I haven't actually seen Mirkwood because that's all level 60 plus content and I've only gotten out of Moria once. And it was night, yes.
Yes.
But finally got a go at the new skirmish stuff. No, it's a lot of fun actually. It's excellent alternative gameplay, I think, as well as the normal leveling, the normal questing, this, that, and the other. You've got these whole on-demand instances you can go and have a quick crack at if you're on your own or in a small group or whatever. I'm quite liking the henchmen there. I've done mine as a herbalist, predictably enough.
Mine's a tank.
I worry that when we do our first big group skirmish night, it's going to be like four healers and two tanks as henchmen. I don't know what the good ratios for that are. Probably going to have to develop up a second group-based henchman or, you know, buy the skills so I can swap it across, that sort of thing. Yeah, you only get one of those, but you can customise them quite extensively, as far as I can see. Well, you've got your protector, which is your tank. There's a herbalist, which is your healer. There's a sage, which I think is some sort of...
onion.
It's some sort of backline nuki class, I think. There's the banner guard, which I think sort of captainish, sort of auras, groups, that sort of thing. Standard warrior, and I think that's the default one you get. I don't know if that can be developed up though in server role that isn't a tank. Not sure. And there's an archer as well. So again, that'd be ranged DPS type. But yeah, I do wonder about the design of it all. Is there any reason if you aren't a healer yourself, you'd pick anything that wasn't a healer?
No.
Yeah. And vice versa.
Well, it depends if you can be a tank.
Yeah.
I think it's not so much of the healer, it's can you tank yourself? If so, you might as well have a healer.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you're going to need a tank.
You're going to need a tank if you are a healer, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think everyone's probably gone with one of the two. So perhaps likely to see less of the more obscure sorts of minion there when you're in big groups. I don't know, I haven't tried any pick-up groupy stuff for that yet, but it's all very interesting. I've been mostly just ploughing all my skirmish marks into ranking up the skills. Bit of a problem, isn't it, initially... Your henchman seems to start life at about level 29.
Yeah, he starts way down and we're way up. And
there's
a big gap in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, in mission, when I click on it, it reports as my level, but all the skills and all the abilities start at 29 and rank up once every five. Every time you spend a rank, you get another five levels worth. So I think for most of us, it's going to be a question of repeating some of these skirmishes just to get the thing up to speed, you know, get it viable. Some interesting skirmishes there. I quite like the Siege of Gondomon. I did that's the sort of town in the Dwarf and Elf starter area, the instance there. You have to guard three gates. I was doing them all on my own level, which apparently was a bit of a mistake, but much easier if you drop a level or two. You only get like 90% of the points, but they're much quicker and much more manageable. But I was trying them on even level to begin with, because I didn't know any better. Did the Siege of Gondomon, that was all right. It was a bit touch and go at the very end. I mean, you have to guard three different gates, and then at the very end they just pile in on the guy at the back you have to keep alive. Yeah, and I didn't realise they send some after that guy as well as the normal main rush.
Yeah.
And I got all panicky and tried to tank the whole lot, because I figured he couldn't cope, and it turns out he's easily capable of...
he was my main damage dealer when I do it.
Yeah, the guy you got to protect can take out the ones they send directly against him, so you just got to keep busy on the stairs and work through there. Very touch and go, though, because, like I say, got a slightly substandard healer, and it was all, oh, God, just, you know, very sort of balancing plates, really. It's a lot of fun, though. Very exciting. Let's see, there's the Trickery Mischief one I quite like. That's the one where you're in Southbury working your way up. And that was a lot more managed because you choose the pace.
Yeah.
You advance when you're ready, whereas I did let the prancing pony burn down, I'm afraid. Sorry to anyone who ever wanted to quest in there again. It's smoking rubble now. That one's basically all done in the courtyard out front of the prancing pony, and you've just got to, well, as well as taking out the normal incoming waves, it sends torchbearers occasionally who don't seem to be tauntable. They will just keep advancing on the inn, and if five of those hit the inn, then that's it. You've lost. But I didn't let five of them through, but I got a bit ambitious on the encounters, you know, the bonus extras that it throws in every so often. So I grab one of those and taunt it back to where the main fight is, and it all got very hectic. And the second watcher thingamajig, who you have to also keep alive, he got womped, so I lost that one. So it's a shame. Ford of Brunin's good. You just stand in the middle of the river, you shall not pass. And they just keep sending stuff at you from the far side. You got both sons of Elrond on your side there as well. And again, it's a, oh God, no, you shouldn't be doing that. Bring him here, bring him here. Let the real tank have a go.
Have you NPCs ever played an MMO?
Yeah, no, don't go over there. Yeah, one of them's an archer and the other one goes for melee, and it's the melee one that you have to keep an eye on. But and what was the other one I did? I haven't done the Amon Sol one yet. Yeah, the Weathertop one, I'm guessing. I've got to give that a go, yeah. And they took out the Barrow one.
Yeah, they put some back in. I don't know if we've got them, but the Americans have got them back, I think. I
haven't checked since Tuesday, but yeah, that one's removed because apparently stealth classes can just go into hiding at the start and then just stand there.
Yeah.
Because it's a survive the incoming one, and they could just stealth it right to the end without fighting. So I think they've had to remove that one. But yeah, it's good. I'm not sure how often I'd want to be doing them. I can manage like one of a session, but I wouldn't want to be chaining them three or four of a night.
That's because you're a lightweight.
Well, I am.
Don't put the effort in required to play these games.
Yeah, but you look at all the vendors with all their Skirmish Martyr awards, and there's just
thousands,
so much there. Yeah.
Thousands and thousands to spend.
Exactly, and you think, God, you know, if I let it, this will become a grind, and it will just sort of drive me out of the game, possibly. So, you know, it's a question of a bit of self-restraint there, a bit of patience with the bigger total items that are available. Like that mark I need from Urugarath. It's like about 1650 points, and I get about 200 to 300 per go, and I just don't want it to become a, oh my God, I need to do this one 8 more times to get the thing I need. I'll just keep picking away at them for their own sake, you know, enjoy them for what they are.
Yeah.
And yeah, at the moment I'm just ploughing everything back into my training, my henchmen up to be a viable and powerful assistant. So that's all good. We did a bit more of the story stuff in Moria. We're just working on Volume 2. Again, mostly solo quests. I imagine we'll hit something groupy sooner or later. But it's nice just to sort of be, I suppose, yeah, low-key adventuring, just working, just travelling here, there and everywhere and whomping solo monsters as we go. We had a bit of an explore around some of the further reaches of Moria, though, which was quite interesting. Come across one area, I don't even know the names. It was all like red spider eggs and organic-y, horrible walls and everything. It's all a bit System Shock 2, I thought. but I'm not sure that we're quite ready to quest in there yet, but it's nice to see. I'm very impressed with the waterworks area. Fantastic soaring caverns and waterfalls everywhere, and ancient dwarven architecture. It's all quite good. I think we're more or less definitely based in the 21st Hall now. That's sort of our area where the quests are for us.
I think that's where most of the player base is.
Yeah, I know. So still get my head around the fact that there's like usually about 20 people standing around there whenever I go near the place. It's like, oh God, what are these people doing in my MMO? I didn't think anyone played this. But I imagine they'll all be off to Moria or, Mirkwood soon enough. But yeah, all good stuff in there. I found out what my crafting can do for legendary items.
What's that?
Yeah, it's not to make them taste better.
It's a custard you put over the blade.
No. You make special feasts which you hand into the guild faction guy, and he'll give you sealed relics in return. So
greedy bastard.
Yeah, well, yeah. And so not technically anything to do with cooking, but the guy appreciates your cooking efforts so much he gives you items that go in that fourth mysterious legendary item slot. It seems each crafting guild gives out different bonuses, though, which is interesting. I'm a cook, so mine have plus maximum morale. I don't know if there's other guilds that have more useful stuff. But it's all good to have something for everyone, isn't it? Because something I've noticed with Mariah is there's not a lot to do for cooks. You sort of go in there, and the last strawberry you saw was out in Eregion. And that's about it, really. There's crafting instances for woodworkers and all the rest of it. Is there a mushroom farm in there? No, there's not.
How do you know you haven't just not found it yet?
Maybe I haven't found it. Could be. But yeah, nothing epic really. We haven't done any huge instances or that kind of thing. But some good, just groundwork really, exploring Moria properly, finding all these new places, getting a lay of the land, all that, advancing up the level slowly. I think I'm 58 now. Can't remember, something like that. So all still good going there. Let's see, Guild Wars. We did the Tomb of the Primeval Kings, which is another of these endgamey instances. This one's good because you don't need to pay to go in, so you can you can balls it up as many times as you like without bankrupting yourself, which is good. It's a series of four maps based on the back in the mists of history, the old Hall of Heroes arena that they repurposed to be a PvE content area. Some quite challenging work in there. They're all sort of level 28s, 24 to 28s, various warriors, siege worms bombing you as you're moving up, trying to get the stuff done. There's no real trick to it or gimmick builds. It's quite standard adventuring, but you do need to be very careful with the pulling and the mini map positioning and stuff. The groups are manageable, but if you get two or three at once, you're finished. So it's very much a case of proceeding slowly, good team communication. You know, work as you work through it in patience, just being patient about it all. There's a lot of places where you can very easily just charge ahead and aggro four groups at once and wipe. But if you just take a bit of time, study how they move, you can lure them out and deal with them one group at a time. And we got all the way to the end of that, which was very satisfying. I was very pleased. We got a bunch of green items, green unique weapons out of the bosses at the end. But there's no general large, huge payout or massive rewards or big quests or chests at the end of it all. It's very much an exercise for its own sake, I think. I imagine we're probably about the only people who've ever done it solo, done it as a group properly, because we were standing around in the lobby and it's just a constant stream of lone assassin elementalists running in there and then appearing in the lobby, running in there. And apparently it's a good farming spot for ectoplasm, you know, the big end game super rare craft material. And they were literally solo, because you see over the top of their heads in outposts there's a little symbol that shows how many are in the group, and none of them are in groups. So I'm guessing it's some kind of uber assassin elementalist combo build that makes them suitable for farming. And I think they will just go in there, kill the first two groups or something, and then just quit out and just keep rinsing and repeating until they get ectoplasm drops. And that just seems horrific. Oh, God, you know, just rinse and repeat that over and over and over to get these rare craft items, which presumably you then just sell for cash. And I don't even know what they're spending this cash on. There's nothing. It's Guild Wars. It has a negligible economy. I don't know. Maybe it's mini pets. It's good to have a hobby, I suppose, but, you know, my time could be better spent. But if that's the way you enjoy playing, then more power to you. Let's see, what else we had? No City of Heroes. I have actually cancelled that now.
Have you?
Yeah. I have enjoyed my time there. It's been very good. I think largely more the people than the setting specifically, as is often the case with my gaming. Just got my 15-month veteran reward, so yeah, we had a good run there. Got a superhero all the way out through City of Heroes from 0 to 50. So that's a good sense of achievement there. The villains, we got up to about 30s, I think, but sort of various people leaving the group and various real life considerations. So, and I'm satisfied with it, to be honest. Satiated, you know.
You've done.
I'm done. Yeah, I may come. I think I probably will come back to look at City of Rogues. Probably not when it launches, but a little after. See that whole new section. See what they've added. See what's new and interesting there. There's a graphical upgrade coming. They're going to redo the lighting and improve the shadows and reflections and things. There's like a gun catter power set coming in, you know, the sort of two pistol John Woo fighting.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, a huge amount of new backstory to go with this whole City of Rogues concept, which is sort of like a bit where the heroes become villains and the villains become heroes, and it's all in between and grey areas and all that kind of exploration of those ideas from comics and so on. So yeah, I think I'm pretty much done with City of for the moment. But I'm not leaving in a huff at all. It's an amicable parting, and that's always good. I mean, you know, in my past I've often rage quit, you know, properly rage quit MMOs because I just hated them. But it's always nice to leave on a high note, you know, wanting a little bit more, but not sick to death of the whole thing. And I think if more people get to that state and perhaps understand when to leave on a high, you know, I think there'll be a lot less rage in their forums and so on. So I'd just like to extend a massive thanks to Foxy Bimbo and Welsh Troll for being most excellent tour guides of my time there. The veterans of the game, and showing me around, showing me how to get the best out of it all, and being fantastic group members as well. So that's all good stuff. Let's see, we've got DDO.
Okay.
Yeah. We went and bought the Shan Syndicate in the end. About 250, 300 points. I can't remember. I think it might have been on special. But
was that in real money?
In real money, it's $5.
Was that in real money?
In real money, it's £2.50, roughly.
No, it's not.
Isn't it?
The exchange rate is not 2-1.
Oh, I don't know.
It's about 1.6 or 1.7.
So what's that in real money?
Don't know.
Yeah, well, anyway. Yeah, a couple of quid for...
About $1.
A couple of quid for an adventure that lasted about an hour and a half. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was. I think everyone was being quite chipper about it, but I'm sure there was a little bit of disappointment and dismay at how little you get really for your money for that particular adventure pack. Lots of people were reassuring me that the other ones were better and last longer and so on, and that perhaps this wasn't a representative one.
Yeah, I always get suspicious when people do that nowadays. Don't worry, the rest of it's okay.
Yeah, well, we did it twice in a row. We did it this week as well, just basically to get a bit more money from the playthrough. We've all gotten through it on Elite now, though, which is pretty hard work, actually. It's basically this criminal gang that are trying to move in on the marketplace area of the city there, of Stormreach, and you're sort of sent on this chained series of adventures to deal with them one step at a time by the city guard. There's a big overriding quest that chains them all together. I can't remember, it's about three or four or five small, and they are very small adventures, to be fair. The dungeons involved are generally, well, the very first one is basically one room. You have to stand in there and defend a guy, and for about 5 minutes while he gets attacked by various people, you shoot them all down and hurrah, win. And out of there into another one. There's a bank job, which is quite cool. You get conned into stealing stuff from the banks and so on. There's a hostage situation that went pretty badly. Actually, our SWAT team could be more efficient, frankly.
Was the first action to kill the hostage?
The first action was to storm in there, aggro everything, and then have the hostages run into the nightmarish number of lethal blade traps that are in this domestic home. Yeah, it's not the kind of house I'd want.
The correct way to deal with a hostage situation is shoot the hostage and then explain to them that they've got no bargaining position anymore.
Yeah, you have no hostage, now what? Yeah, so unfortunately the quest log didn't seem to agree with us on that. Yeah, it all culminates in the final mission, which I think is perhaps the real interesting and fun one, which is you have to sort of masquerade yourself into this meeting of criminal gangs, and then it all goes a bit pear shaped, and it's you have to escape across the rooftops, which was really well done, actually. I mean, that last mission is perhaps worth the admission price for the whole set, but I mean, as a whole, I think. It's very difficult to sort of put a value on your experiences and enjoyment, and I sort of try not to do that where possible. But I did feel that, I don't know, that I ought to have gotten more, or that I should have paid less.
$10 for 2 hours is the baseline.
Yeah.
Because that's what movie sort of is.
It was approaching that. But then, yeah, but compared to sort of $15 for as much MMO as you can eat in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And typically that will be content you've not seen yet if you're playing through a normal MMO. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'd like to do more of them, but I'm really thinking that if we're going to go that route, the subscription's going to be the way, because the VIP people do get it all for free.
VIP do you think that all of these things are priced in a position to push you into getting a subscription?
I think the maths is pretty clear to anyone, yeah. I mean, they do these interesting things called guest passes, which is like 15 turbine points, which is going to be some tiny negligible amount of real-life money, and that'll allow you to enter an adventure for an hour.
Okay.
I mean, I don't like the implied time pressure of that, you know, that, oh my God, we've got to get this done. Yeah, but then perhaps you buy two or three and chain it. I don't know. I mean, having bought the adventure module, we are now allowed to repeat it as many times as we like, but, you know, it's the thing with DDO dungeons in particular is that they become very self-spoiling very quickly. You know where all the traps are, you know what's going to happen. You know, if it gets to the point where everyone in the party except the rogue is stood next to the trap going, trap, even though that they can't see anything on their screen, it's, I think perhaps you've overused that instance a bit much. I don't know, I think perhaps... I think if the will is there to keep playing and as a sort of social group we're all enjoying it, I think I probably will end up subbing because it's just going to save much more money in the long run rather than cranking these out every other week or whatever. We went and had a go at the PvP as well.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, oh, that was brilliant. We've just finished our elite run-throughs of the Shan Syndicate, and it's like, oh, what should we do now? We've got 9 people, you know, 3-6 in a party and so on. And it turns out you can change your group into a raid / PvP group, add as many people as you like. I think it goes up to about 20-odd or whatever. And then randomly assign people on that team to people in the group, in the overall raid group, to what, to the red or blue team. Then you go to these NPCs who are in the tavern basements, and he lets you go to one of four different PvP maps. And there's like a sewer one in some sort of red rock canyons. Some of them are capture the flag, some are deathmatch, and we were just having a good old time leaping around in there. And because of the pacing and the speed of DDO, it really does. I just felt like I was playing like Hexen or Quake or something. I mean, there's one sewer map where you've got jump pads in it. These big glowing rings where you just run across them and it catapults you up onto ledges. And yeah, it was just fascinating seeing how the DDO class makeup works in a PvP team situation. I learned very quickly that I'm basically a one-hit melee kill. So I spent most of each match running away from our plate-wearing juggernaut, paladins and clerics and things. The clerics are a nightmare. Not only can they self-heal, they're wearing plate mail. It just defies all the rules. But I realised that if I could find a nice high ledge and crank the draw distance all the way up, you can shoot a phenomenal distance with the bows in that game. I mean, you're sort of half a map away of plinking away at people, and they have no idea where it's coming from. So Ranger's place in that PvP is definitely on the inaccessible ledges. Yeah, so I got a few kills, but by no means the most. The monks are definitely very overpowered in there, actually. Melmoth has rolled a monk to join our little group, and they've just like running around one-hitting stuff, chain healing, grouping everyone, group healing everyone. It's so quickly developed the strategy of run away from the monk in our big PvP rumble at the end there. But yeah, so we're still quite enjoying that, still playing through that. We have to have a think about how we're going to proceed with the paid content, though, because I don't want to be pressuring people into paying stupid money for very short gaming experiences, and I think probably a subscription might be the way to go there. And so in a way, their business model has worked. It does work, yes. You start off thinking, well,
so it's not really free to play.
No.
It's just basically a free trial, which you can pretty pay much, a lot of money to actually get at the content.
Yeah,
when
you start
wish.
Playing for free, you think, yeah, great, we're playing for free. And then you start thinking, well, I want to do a bit more than what they provide for free. And so you buy a module and you think, hang on, that's really expensive. So pretty much eventually you're just going to end up into a sub model. And I think everyone playing that, if they're going to put two and two together, will find themselves either walking away from the game or becoming subscribers. So I wonder if this whole free-to-play forever system is anything more than a red herring. You see people sort of investing huge amounts, of significance into this is the way the game will change, this is the future of MMO. No, it's not really, because the way it's all scaled, you're pretty much going to end up in a sub anyway if you've got any kind of sense.
Well, we're seeing this.
If you want to keep playing.
We're seeing almost this model in Conan and Warhammer now, you've got so much of the game and then you can subscribe and get the rest.
Yeah.
All they've done is added the ability of, say, Warhammer, you could pay to get this new skirmish.
Well, you give people long enough and they will become invested in the thing, and then they're going to be a lot more likely to actually stump up and pay some money. I mean, 10-day free trial, that's useless, because you don't have long enough to get invested in that game or those characters or that world. You're probably not going to form much in the way of social links. I mean, this is DDO in our case is a bit different, because it's essentially a static group of people who already knew each other and were friends before we started. But a normal 14-day trial of any MMO, as I've shown again and again in my Operation Cheapseat stuff, is just not enough to really develop a sense of caring about a game.
No, I think
they're very clever, but I also think it's a little cynical, because I think ultimately you're just going to end up subbing.
The 10-day free trial is going to die out. My prediction for 2010.
Yeah?
10-day free trial is going to die out.
You're going to see lots of these, finger quotes, unlimited free trials. Yeah, yeah.
It'll either be all the game-ish with money to get the rest of it, or have the starter area.
But I suppose from Turbine's perspective, it has worked. I have, with no real intention of doing so at the start, actually paid up and bought content. And yes, I'm thinking of a sub. So it does work, yeah. It does get money in. So yeah, I think you're probably spot on with that prediction. I think we will see lots more of this kind of thing going on in games. Well, certainly games that feel they're not doing as well as they ought to be.
Yeah,
let's put it that way. Speaking of Warhammer, played a little bit more of that. I don't know. I sort of bounced off it a bit.
You hit level 10 and suddenly there.
Well, I hit level 10 in about three characters. It's more that trial area is just not really enough. But obviously it's a trial. They want to actually earn money, and I can't blame them for limiting it all. So what do you want to hear? Do you want to hear the Warhammer bug of the week, or do you want to hear the Warhammer free trial restriction added of the week?
I want to hear both.
Okay, well, the bug of the week, the little book that appears with you in your character, your inventory, if you're, say, for example, a dwarf, that takes you to the dwarf starter campaign, but which is not allowed to be used by trial accounts,
yeah.
Isn't. Well, I clicked it because I was just, I don't know, maybe trying to click something else, or I may have been willfully trying to steal from them. I can't remember. But you click the thing, it says, not available for trial accounts, and then the teleport charge-up bar starts anyway. At the end of which, it says, not available for trial accounts, and then you end up in Ekund, the dwarf starter area. Right, so...
And from then on, can you always go there?
Well, you use a rally point there, and I haven't died yet, but presumably you'll start at the rally point, yeah. I don't know if you'll be able to go back if you ever leave and go into the... It's just a mess, it really is. And they've added a new restriction to the trial accounts. In the trial accounts cannot now equip blue or purple or the mythic grade items.
Okay.
Yeah, there's been a phenomenal amount of twinking going on at the OpenRVR Tier 1. Yes, they're level 10, but their effective stats are often like 10 levels above because they've got stupid talons, like my Knight of the Blazing Sun, actually.
Yeah.
I haven't logged into that one yet since, but I'm guessing that as long as you don't unequip it, you can still keep the things you've already got. So I think it's maybe shutting the door after the horse has bolted. I think they're trying to work on reasons why you'd want to subscribe. And I think, you know, a smart move might be giving people a competitive edge in the OpenRVR if they've actually paid you some money at all.
Yeah.
But then the OpenRVR, for people who are paying in rank one, you're just going to blast through in about two or three sessions and end up chickened and off to the next match anyway. So I'm not quite sure why this measures seemed necessary at all. But there you go. They've replaced the loading page. You know, you have the loading, the big book.
Yeah.
On one side it tells you about the zone. On the other side there's some nice concept art. That concept art's gone now, and it's just reasons you want to upgrade. So I'm just
please upgrade. Please.
I think in general I'm wondering if they've perhaps given a lot more away than they thought they should and are now trying to wind it all back a bit, really. So I saw one joker on the chat saying, yeah, next week you won't be able to use region chat.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Well,
actually,
I don't know. Well, it's not a gold spamming thing. I've never seen any in there. So whatever they do on that regard works. I think you can't use the mail and the auction house. That's a standard measure. But yeah, it's like they're increasingly nerfing the trial account over and over just to try and encourage some people that they may want to actually play. But the thing is, it's... That Warhammer, for me, I haven't got time to play it properly. I haven't got room for another sub. So it occupies a fantastic 15-minute drop-in slot for me in a sort of genre, you know, MMOs, that doesn't generally have much of that. And that's how I've been using it. I've been just playing the odd 15 minutes here and there, charging around the PvP, and hopefully providing cannon fodder for people who are paying, hopefully bulking it up, making it look busy for people who are paying. But not terribly invested in it myself, and I can't see any of these current measures making me want to change my mind on that regard. But then, of course, I've been playing on the console a lot this fortnight as well, which has been cutting into my Warhammer drop-in time. I've been playing lots and lots and lots of Saints Row 2.
Terrible game.
I know. It's brilliant. It's really good. Once you get over the initial horror at the carnage that goes on and, you know, leave your morality by the door, it's actually an enormous amount of fun.
Morality.
Yeah, well, it's a game in which you are the head of a gang in a city that's got very patchy law enforcement, frankly. And
some of them are corrupt, some are just a bit rubbish.
Right. So, yeah, it's your typical open-world sandbox game, but they do it really well. I'm just so impressed with how much stuff there is to do in that game. I mean, there's activities everywhere that you use to build up your reputation. It's a sort of pseudo-leveling system. In the, you can't just go straight in and do the story finish. You have to sort of take a break every mission and earn a bit more respect by doing side missions and things, and then back onto the story. And I'm just having a lot of fun in that game. And I don't know why, because I never really got on with Vice City, which is like pretty much the only other similar. I've not played GTA 4, so I don't know what it is about this particular game.
I think you're just in a different space now than you were then.
It could be me, could be I've changed.
You're more welcoming to the whole idea of console gaming.
It's not so much that.
Before you were being a bit of a PC snob. And
it's not so much that. Well, I don't know, the driving's smoother, the police response is a bit more enjoyable. I mean, I remember Vice City, pretty much everything you do, you instantly get like SWAT teams and helicopters on you, and it just got really, really annoying and frustrating, whereas... in Saints Row, you can manage it a lot better. You know, if you've got a bit of police trouble, you can just drive it off, you know, just hit the road and eventually it will calm down. Whereas in Vice City, it just seemed like touch a lamppost and you are going to jail forever and probably killed too. Whereas Saints Row, it's, you know, I shouldn't have done that. Now that's made the game a bit more difficult, but I can calm down a bit and it'll all get back to normal. So that's all quite good. Liking the customization there.
Yeah, always a lot of customization.
Yeah, oh, God, all the clothes shops in there. I've gone a bit mad with those, really. I spend far more time in those than is healthy. I've gone with a sort of Audrey Hepburn type character, I've decided.
Okay.
Yeah. I was tempted with the Mockney guy at the start there, but I thought, no, we'll go with the hot chick. And I seem to have, developed an Audrey Hepburn thing. And it's well, you know, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is Breakfast at Tiffany's with Uzis.
Oh.
It's a very similar sort of concept, but, yeah, so I'm having a lot of fun dressed up there in the car, playing the easy listening radio on the car and just machine gunning motorbikes down and firing grenades back into the carriageway. It's all very cathartic, yeah. I do worry about that sometimes, the dressing up. I mean, Why, yes, I do like The Wizard of Oz. Why do you ask? It's a lot of fun. I'm quite liking the stories as well. I got really sort of quite involved in the Brotherhood story, where I won't spoil it in case anyone hasn't played it. It's probably quite a long time now anyway, but I started taking some of that quite personally and going on a bit of a vendetta against them all. As a result, but it's just fun collecting all the stuff. You know, you got usual. Here are all your hidden things you got to go and find. There's a whole load of jumps. You got to unlock the cars. The Hitman and Chop Shop lists are good fun as well. Again, collection gameplay.
Yeah,
you sort of get this big list of cars you need to hijack and bring back, and it's just finding them, doing the detective work on, and the assassinations as well. It's not just run up to this guy on the mini map and kill him. You got to often do stuff like phone a pizza delivery truck to lure him out, that kind of thing. It's very, I don't know, I'm feeling very Oblivion, very similar. I mean, I played Oblivion and Morrowind again beforehand as well. Not so much the gameplay, they're not that similar at all. But
I don't remember carjacking in Oblivion, no.
Not quite, but just the way that this is a great big playground and I could lose myself in here for weeks, you know? And it, where most sandbox games, I don't know, sandbox is very hit and miss. I mean, I noticed out of all the games you've lent me, they're pretty much all open world sandbox games.
Yeah, I came to a realisation about that.
Yeah, so basically I've got enough gameplay there to last me for the next 15 years. I don't actually need any more games. But it's great having a sandbox and great having the open world and the freedom and everything, but there needs to be stuff in the sandbox, you know? If you just leave it with sand, that's it. You've got Second Life, essentially, which doesn't work for many people, and myself one of them. I get terribly bored. But there's lots to do in here. There's always stuff going on. I mean, just the simple act of hijacking a car. If you accidentally get one that's got a passenger in it, you get the option of doing this hostage.
Oh, those are
hostage
fun.
Hostage minigame, yeah. Which suddenly you have to try and keep the car moving for a minute while you're chased by police. And
if you slow down too much, they get out.
They get out and run away. And if you can do it, you earn some money at the end of it, yeah. I mean, there's sort of just fantastically, wickedly depraved gameplay to it all. I mean, this isn't a nice game for nice people.
You've found the septic tank game yet?
The septic Avenger submission, yeah. You basically drive around, you sort of autopilot around a route on the city, firing this cannon of septic waste at as much stuff as you can to cause as much damage. And
painting the world brown.
Yeah, exactly. It is a sort of wickedly depraved game, but it's very cathartic as well. I mean, I'm always banging on about computer game violence, but there's a certain light, if you can use the term lightheartedness, I suppose, gallows humour, I don't know.
No point in it does it feel real.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And whereas something like GTA 4, perhaps, that tries to play it all quite seriously and dark.
I'm not sure if
I don't know.
It's certainly closer.
I'm just getting a sort of wicked sense of glee at the carnage I cause in this game, when I suppose generally I'm quite a peaceable sort of person. But so I don't know if it excuses the levels of violence and the things you're allowed to do in that game. Perhaps they stand on their own and don't really need explaining or excusing, but I'm enjoying it a lot. And yeah, just sort of, I've gotten, well, because you know you earn respect for doing all sorts of stuff,
yeah.
Often just driving like a lunatic, which is very easy for players in the UK because we have a natural advantage in that we're used to driving on the wrong side of the road.
Yes, it's the same thing that Burnout does. It rewards you for being on the wrong side of the road.
I know, whenever I'm playing Burnout Paradise, I sort of sometimes forget it's supposed to be a US city, so I've always got a full boost tank because I just get like phenomenally long oncoming bonuses. Yeah, and the same in this game as well. But, I've got cranked up enough respect to do about 15 or 16 missions, and I don't really want to, I'm busy. I'm just
puttering
around.
That's what I found. I
The sort of requirement playing. To unlock each story.
I went off. I did the fighting one. Where you go to the prison and do fighting with inmates.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, by the time I'd gone through all of them, I'd got whatever bonus it was for completing all 15 or however many there were, and I had way more respect than I needed ever again.
Probably got enough respect to complete the game now, but I'm still sort of about a third the way through each of the main three stories there. Presumably there's a fourth story as well at the very end.
Yeah,
because you've got these three rival gangs, and there's like big, quite an involved narrative involving each of them as you try and bring your gang to prominence and take those down. And then I guess there's like a fourth big corporate gang at the far end of it all that you have to sort out once you've done the other three, something like that. I'll get there, I'll find out when I get there. But
see, I didn't spoil the game this time.
Excellent, thank you. Much appreciated. Yeah, I mean, just some of the side missions, some of the side activities are insane there. There's the insurance fraud one. I found that in the end. Yeah.
I love the insurance fraud.
It's basically you're helping this corrupt doctor treat patients faster by trying to arrange injuries. And so you do this by basically walking up to a busy intersection and throwing yourself into traffic as spectacularly as possible. And that reminded me so much of the Burnout. You know, the crash junctions,
yeah.
Burnout, except you're using yourself, using your own body with all the associated crunches. And
yeah, it's when you're doing it and you see a police car coming, you're thinking, oh, yeah.
Right, if I can tumble myself into the path of that one, crunch, ding, 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 ding. Yeah, there's the mayhem missions, so those are fantastic.
Yeah.
Infinite ammo, here's the clock, go crazy in a district, blow up as much stuff as you can.
Mainly fences.
Yeah, if you run parallel through a fence section, that cranks the multiplier up insanely. It's great. But then my tip there is just to look for a gas station. Easily, ding, boom, everything. And the trailblazing one, that's insane.
Oh, that's brilliant.
That?
No, that's real sport.
They put you on an...
They do it in America.
Oh, right. Really?
No.
I'm so gullible. They put you in an asbestos suit, put you on a quad bike, set you on fire, and you have to torch as much stuff as you can following this little race course.
And you can hit little explosive...
There's exploding barrels everywhere. And
petrol or whatever.
Puddles of petrol. Just mental. I've not even found the base jumping yet, but I've heard that's in there. I just think they've really got the sandbox... Right, because it's not just sand. It's so much stuff in there that you can just go off and do of a side. You can just play around dressing up. You can drive like a maniac. Super jumps are everywhere, of course. There's collectible CDs for your in-car radio.
Yep.
I've
got all them.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of get the impression...
And don't forget the spray tagging.
Oh, the spray tagging, yeah. Put your gang's graffiti tag on key sites around the city. So there's your collectible gameplay.
Replacing the enemy gang's ones.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just... I don't know, yeah, exactly, a limitless playground, but full of interesting things to do, key thing.
And you know the best bit? It's all co-op, you can do all of it with a friend.
Yeah, I've not tried the online co-op yet, well, apart from one random stranger who joined and just started blowing me up for no reason, I quickly left. Yeah, I didn't realise it lets players, anyone join by default or something, yeah. Yeah, I don't mind playing with us, but I do want to finish the story first myself, because I don't want to have it all spoiled by accidentally joining someone's completed map and all the rest of it. But yeah, that's all good fun. And yeah, that's about it, really. I've been playing lots of Saints Row 2 and my usual MMOs.
Mm.
So what about yourself?
Well, let me just flick to... Today's update is brought to you by 360 Voice.
Mm.
Right, first off, I played Carcassonne.
A what?
Carcassonne.
I think I saw that, yeah.
You've played it before. Mm. It's a German board game.
Yeah.
Which there's an Xbox Live version.
Okay.
And I was... I've been in a bit of a gaming funk.
Yeah, I saw your post on the VanHemlock.com blog about what do you do now.
Yeah, because I...
You've reached a burnout.
I completely burnt out on Assassin's Creed 2. Threw myself in it. Played... all weekend without sleeping, and boom, next day I couldn't really be asked to play anything.
Broke something, clearly.
Yeah. So I played Carcassonne for a bit, and yeah.
Okay, so that's what, simple board game sort of thing? It's the tiles, isn't it?
You
just have to connect up loops.
Yeah, you have to connect up loops, which are towns and regions and whatnot. You have to put down people. Yeah. It's a good game, I really quite enjoy it. I'm tempted to buy the actual board game version.
Entirely a different sort of gameplay to the big... open world sandbox, collect everything, follow the story stuff.
Yeah, it was just a nice thing to slump down in front of the TV and play for an hour.
It's definitely a place for that kind of game.
Oh, definitely.
I need to stock up on a few more of those sorts of things myself.
Then I played... Oh, then to try and counter it, I've been plinking away at Forza 3.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in my penultimate year, I think year 5 of races.
Right.
Level 40-odd, I think,
mm-hmm.
or just about to hit 40 out of 50.
Right.
And I've got hundreds and hundreds of races to go.
Oh, so there's quite a lengthy amount of play there. Problem to is, complete it.
The normal racing is fine. The ones between the championship races, because you can pick what you want, and I'm picking stuff which is short form racing.
So, yeah.
It'll be about 10 miles tops.
Yeah, drop in, spend 5-10 minutes, get it done.
Yeah, but the championship stuff keeps sending you to somewhere like Nürburgring. So, you know, you've got there a 9-minute lap time.
Oh, God. Right.
So, the championship's beginning to take a bit more time. And
It's sort of channeling you through particular things you need to complete, and those are quite lengthy propositions.
Well, they're just the races get longer as the championships go on.
Right.
And so, it takes a while to do those. So you just drop in to play 10 minutes or so.
Mm.
Yeah, okay, you can do it one lap at Nürburgring, but if it's two, you're looking at a longer time.
Yeah, so that becomes an activity you'd have to dedicate some serious time to rather than a quick play.
Yeah,
I see.
But there's still the other races, which, I can still get a couple of minutes out of, so that's all good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, still really enjoying it. Still a really, really, really good racing game.
Mm, yeah, you seem terribly impressed consistently by that game. Seems like the thing to have if you're into
also,
racing.
Also, today I finally managed to encourage my my PS3 to download GT5 race prologue, demo thing.
This the competition?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How are you doing? Are you going
to
win?
No. It took me ages to find reverse after I got lost.
You don't need reverse, you're doing it wrong.
You do need reverse when you're pointing at a barrier.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Looks good.
Is that something you want to try and actually have a serious competitive go
God,
at?
No.
Then, or are you just dabbling with
I
the demo they've provided?
I don't stand a chance of getting anywhere close.
Right.
I don't think the winner is going to win using a controller. The winner's going to win using a proper wheel.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
The controller sucks donkey balls for playing with it.
Right.
You see, it goes back to back in the day when we didn't have analog triggers controllers.
Yeah.
And you used either, like you see in a lot of the sandbox games, A to accelerate and whatever, B or X or triangle or square, circle, whatever, to...
So it's either foot down all the way or nothing.
Yeah. So you've got a binary thing, not very good for a racing game.
Right.
Or you can use the right stick as the accelerator and brake.
Okay.
Now, the problem is, I don't like that. Because I've got used to...
braking whilst hammering it through a corner.
Yeah. I mean, that may be wrong. I don't know.
It's probably bad driving practice.
I don't know, but sometimes I want to bleed off a bit of speed but keep my revs up.
Yes, yeah. You don't want to basically bring... Well, it's like an automatic then, isn't it? You have to bring it all the way back to neutral before you can slow down. So not ideal.
When it would be all about to neutral.
I don't know.
That's not how an automatic
I'm
works.
Nothing.
No. So yeah, I don't know if I'm wrong by the fact that I will brake while on the accelerator, and I don't like the digitalness.
Yeah.
Of the just a button controller, so it's going to need a wheel for me to play the damn thing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I saw one knocking about.
Yeah, that's for the Xbox.
That's for the 360. Right.
So
there's a top tip if you want your big day out at Silverstone.
Yeah, get a wheel.
Get a wheel.
Also. I don't know, it's the same as with Prologue. The game feels a little bit clinical.
Yeah.
I think what it is...
Well, it's essentially the same game, is it? Just
It looks better.
Oh, right.
You only get to the Indy 500 track, the street version of that, and two cars.
Yeah.
But I think what it is, it's the trackside noises and whatnot.
Mm.
I think, you play Forza or something, or Need for Speed Shift, or whatever, you've got the... crowds cheering and stuff, and it really helps to build up an atmosphere. But the Gran Turismo seems a little bit clinical and quiet.
So, as well as a competition, this is essentially a demo. This is what the game
is.
Like
it says
far.
This is a demo of GT5,
and on the basis of that, you're not really sold over Forza.
It's not a demo to sell it, sell the game. It's a demo to show yes, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
But
if they released that tomorrow as the full game, you'd still probably think Forza was a better game.
Forza feels better. Mm. It drives better, I think.
Fair enough. Well, perhaps it'll be refined and improved as we go.
Oh, undoubtedly.
They're going to have to release something soon, though, aren't they?
Well, it's releasing in a couple of months in Japan, and it's looking like a summer release in America now.
Right.
And, it's completely unfair to judge the game on this demo.
Right. Fair enough.
But, I'm not going to Silverstone. What else? Oh, GTA 4. Mm. Yes, I tried using GTA 4 to alleviate my funk.
Oh, yeah. The
but the
there,
problem
yeah.
I had there was I'm playing the Ballad of Gay Tony, and this is it.
Yeah.
After that, gone. No more.
There's no more.
No more story in the game.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't really want to be responsible for finishing it.
You don't want it to be closed.
If I finish, then the incredibly good storytelling in Grand Theft Auto 4 is gone.
Well, have to wait for GTA 5, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not going to be this year.
It'll be a while, won't it? Yeah.
It's not going to be 2010, despite what Patcher said. Mm. Yeah, so I've been going through.
All good stories have.
I've unlocked the base jumping now, so that's given me something else to do.
Fair enough.
All around town, there's a point you can go to, and then you have to jump off a building and land on a target or a moving vehicle or go through rings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you do more, you get a free parachute in your crib. Not crib, sorry, crib. The wrong game.
Throw, yeah.
Yes, in your apartment.
Right.
Yeah, weirdly, the parachutes are one-shot jobs.
Yeah.
So
that makes, I suppose, it makes a bit
more
literal sense.
You have to equip
sense.
It, put it on, arm it, yeah. And when you get out, you can use it. And when you get to the ground, you take it off, and you need to go buy another one.
Well, yeah.
Not quite as fun.
No, well, it's more realistic, but yeah, something like Just Cause, where he instantly repacks it as he lands.
I was always comparing it to Just Cause.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, why can't I use my grapnel and why can't I reuse a parachute?
And the parachute, was that bum bag on his back? Is that the parachute? Foomph! Yeah. Instantly rewinds back in. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's more fun, yeah.
One thing about GTA 4, even these expansionary things, still the best voice acting in any game, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah, beating even Uncharted 2.
Right.
It's just really good quality work.
I must say, I don't generally look particularly discerningly or objectively at voice acting in games. It's either there or it isn't. Sometimes it will be comically bad.
Let me lend you two worlds.
I heard things about that, yeah. Generally, as long as it's, you know, voices that seem to make sense with what's going on at the time, it's good enough, but yeah.
Yeah. I really... I just choked to death.
Still getting over that cold.
Yes, ever so slightly. Yeah, I really noticed it for some reason. I don't know why.
Fair enough.
What else? Oh, yeah, I played some Halo 3 ODST.
Okay, yeah.
Last Saturday in the afternoon, I was feeling a little bit bored because there's nothing on TV.
Yeah.
Although I have discovered there's now an hour and a half worth of computer games TV shows on in the UK.
Blimey.
On a Saturday.
That's excessive.
You've got Game Face, Jinx Files after it, and then we've also got Player on one of the movie channels.
Right.
I don't know why it's on one of the movie channels. There you go.
They had a slot. It's a lot to fill, yeah.
Yeah, so I played that because I needed to get the achievement for playing through without killing any of the engineers at night time.
Right.
Which are these are these floating things which give massive shields and regen to the people below them. And so I needed to run through the game until the time you go underground, which it'll make sense when he's played it.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, two and a half hours later on easy. Really enjoyable, great fun, but, you know, 2.5 hours to do most of the game on easy.
Mm, fair enough.
I got the achievement, though.
Excellent.
Which unlocked me a outfit for my avatar, which is the ODST armour.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why I did it.
Yeah, not a lot of that about at the moment, is there, so far?
There's
the unlockable stuff.
There's
for
some
avatars.
Stuff for Halo, across all the Halo games. It uses individual achievements to get them. Just downloading Halo Waypoint will get you the Guilty Spark toy.
Oh, right.
There's Explosion Man, which you get one T-shirt really easily. By forget what you have to do. You have to blow the first thing up or something.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's another one for completing the entire game in co-op, which is a bit harder. And then there's a bunch of stuff for Left 4 Dead 2, including a Depeche Mode T-shirt.
I just thought there'd been a lot more of it about, but as you were telling me earlier in the week, it's still quite a recent.
Yeah, it only really came out a couple of months ago. Mm. The ability to have these.
The game will unlock stuff for your little dashboard avatar guy. Yeah.
And I think it's a really nice little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I probably wouldn't buy an awful lot of fluff for them, but earning it from games seems more acceptable.
Oh, yeah. Somehow. And it's nice having another meta thing. Yeah. In the game, on top of achievements or as related to achievements. I'd like to see them not actually tied to achievements.
Mm, I'm doing really badly on Saints Row 2 achievements. I've been playing it obsessively for about 2 weeks and I've only got two so far.
No, you've got three, I think.
Have I?
I checked you yesterday.
You pay more attention than I do.
Well, you see, the moment I noticed you in Saints Row, yeah. I immediately checked your achievements, saw you had the first one.
Yeah.
Return to the Row, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And then I've been checking...
What do you get for getting out of the tutorial?
I've been checking obsessively to see if you've actually done any of the plot.
No, well, I'm starting
because
to
I know
concentrate
you,
on that
you
now.
You start these sandbox games and get completely distracted.
Ooh, shiny thing. Bye. Yeah. Well, no, ever since that quite harsh thing happened during one of the stories, I've been hell-bent on destroying the Brotherhood now, so I'm going to crack through those quite quickly.
Yeah. moving on, I played a bit of Dragon Age Origins.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I finally got out of that stupid mage tower.
You're still in that dream sequence.
Well, see, I was in the dream sequence, and I couldn't be arsed, because you have to do everything, then go back and do stuff again with the different abilities you've got, and
Right.
Yeah, so I got out there.
Back on track.
Yeah, and I'm in the world now.
Right.
Ran into Tuvok.
Tuvok?
Yes.
Awesome.
And I'm actually now desperately leveling up, so I've got enough skill to persuade the werewolves to eat him.
Right. I'm sure that will make sense when I start playing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. it makes perfect sense now.
Yeah. Well, I burnt half of Michael Dorn's face off earlier. That was awesome.
We could be a lot nicer to Star Trek people in computer games. They're never friendly.
They always have a bad time, yeah.
I bet something nasty happened to Kate Mulgrew in Dragon Age as well. And then what happened? Oh, yes, I solved my funk problem.
Your funk problem?
Yes.
You have a funk problem.
Sorry, funk problem.
What?
My funk. I was in my funk, remember?
Oh, the funk. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sorry. Not
yes.
Music.
No.
Right. Gotcha.
No.
Yes. How did you resolve that?
The Saboteur.
The Saboteur. So
yes.
Launched straight into another massive sandbox game.
I launched into yes. Yeah. I realised that I really, really, really only really like sandbox games now.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Uncharted 2, brilliant game, brilliantly executed. You don't want to go back after.
Play through it once.
It's linear. You do your plot. Mm. Bump. Yeah. There's a bit of collecting and whatnot. And I realised that I need the sandbox game for me to actually play a game enough for it to click and for me to make that,
yeah,
make those memories of, yes, I really enjoyed this game.
I've sort of noticed this slightly in myself as well. Yeah, I mean, something like, as you describe, Uncharted 2, that's got a fantastic story. You play through A, B, C, D, E, mission to the end, done, story finished.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of gameplay you'd expect as a part of a real game, you know, a sandbox game. Yeah, I mean, Saints Row's a good example. You've got sort of three main stories you work through in there and probably another one at the end as well. And yet, at the same time, as a living, breathing city with all sorts of crazy stuff going on, mostly perpetrated by you.
While I was playing ODST again...
The story's only a part.
Yeah, while I was playing ODST again, it was the sandbox bit running around New Mombasa.
Yeah.
The first time I did that, it was the collecting the audio logs in that for the story.
Mm. Yeah.
And that is what made the game for me. That's what made me play and enjoy it enough to form those memories of enjoying it, so I remember it fondly.
Somewhere in there's a perfect blend of sandbox and story, because, I mean, as we've seen, Just Cause, I suppose, as an example, it's a sandbox with not an awful lot to do in it. There's like four or five types of activity,
yeah,
and that's about it, and basically you just keep repeating them in this big lush tropical paradise, and presumably Just Cause 2 it'll be a bit more
they say they're resolving
it.
Yeah,
and again, I think it was a criticism of Assassin's Creed 1 over 2.
Yeah.
I get to the point where I just don't want to play the first instalment of a sandbox game anymore. I'm just going to go straight for the sequel.
Oh, but I always do, because I love to see how games evolve.
Mm, possibly, yeah. As a sort of historical point of interest, yeah.
Well, but I'm not that it's more of... there's this bit in the back of my mind which always says, I could have been a game designer.
Mm. In another life.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've just got no real urge at all to play Saints Row 1, you know, because the game I've got now, is superior and it has enough to keep me entertained. So, yeah. So the sandbox, I mean, yeah. Oh, launching into topic mode here, aren't I? Carry on.
Yes. So, yes, the Saboteur. Basically,
yes.
World War II,
mm.
You are a Irish racing driver.
Oh, yeah.
Who's in Paris.
Yeah.
Who's got a grudge against a Nazi who killed your mate.
Uh-huh.
And you join up with the resistance.
Uh-huh.
In fact, help form the resistance.
Racing car super spy.
Yes. Who was actually based on a real guy.
Yeah, he sounds awesome.
the real guy died in a concentration camp before the end of the war.
That's awesome.
It was probably a POW camp. Probably. Yeah. Anyway.
So slightly based on historical events.
Yes.
To a point.
And so there's racing cars, racing, and the most beautiful aesthetic in any game.
Yeah,
before you've liberated an area of the city, it's brilliant. Black and white with only the red and a couple of colours. But the moment you do certain missions, boom, you get this big whooshy expanding ring of colour, which fills it in to make it all still quite muted 40s colours.
Yeah, yeah.
But it fills it in, so it feels really oppressive before you do that. Then afterwards, it feels all warm and...
Yeah, I was watching you playing a bit of it, and it all did look very Casablanca when you were driving around the Nazi-controlled areas. It's sort of almost like the Dread and Hope thing from Lotro.
Yes, very much so.
Excellent.
Also, yeah, when you're in a Nazi-controlled area, black and white, it's harder to escape from them. And when you're in a slightly liberated area, the people around you will rise up and help fight.
So you've got this sort of police awareness threat mechanic that you find in a lot of these sorts of games.
Yes, it's a lot more... there's a whole new evolution of it beyond Saints Row 2.
Yeah,
GTA 4 came up with this whole new idea with you have a ring, and if you can escape from the ring of...
Ah, so it becomes a geographically based
threat. Yes, and they will follow you.
Oh, yeah.
And if somebody else sees you, then the ring expands and continues.
Because Saints Row 2, basically, the more acts you perpetrate, the higher this one bar goes up, and each new star means a higher level of threat.
Yeah, you still have multiple levels of threat.
And it sort of fades over time if you can stay ahead of them long
enough. This time it doesn't fade over time. You just have to get out or hide.
Right.
Which, works really well. It's...
it's not quite as transparent as the Assassin's Creed. Quick, jump in a bale of hay. I'm clear. Hurrah.
It's nearly. There are safe spots which you can jump into if you're not being watched exactly like Assassin's Creed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Break cover, then hide in a haystack.
Yeah. Yes. So you've got lots and lots of weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Your primary weapon being explosives, because there's an awful lot to blow up.
Wow, the default basic weapon is dynamite. Awesome. Yeah.
Basically, where you have normal collecting in one of these games, there's only a couple of things that need collecting. It's not like 16 postcards and whatnot lying around. But the rest of it is, there are these big white dots on the map. Oh, once you buy an upgrade for your map, it puts the white dots on, but before then you can't see it on the map, which is stuff like Nazi sniping towers or propaganda speakers or fuel tanks or
spotlights,
AA guns, spotlights. And what you have to do is blow them up. And by blowing them up, you get contraband, which is effectively the currency.
Oh, okay. So you still have sort of buy upgrades and things.
Yeah, so you can buy weapons. They're always available. Mm-hmm. You've got cars that need repairing and stuff.
Yeah, I see.
And, there's thousands of things to blow up.
That's your side collection gameplay, and yet it's still quite a relevant, important thing.
It's incredibly important.
It's not just these abstract, glowy orbs on
rooftops. When you're trying to escape from the Nazis, and you're driving along at a belt, there's bikes following you, you manage to lose the bikes, go along, these watchtowers will still see you. So if you've gone through and blown up all the watchtowers along certain routes,
makes life much easier.
These routes
later
are quite good for escaping down.
So that sounds quite clever. Quite a good way of... we all love collection side quests and so on, but sometimes they can be terribly irrelevant.
Yeah.
And this is a good way of sort of bringing them back into the main...
And it just feels so wonderful, just the... this morning, for instance, I cleared out Le Havre. Of all of the Nazi items. So I was just going around as well. If I set the explosives there, it's going to take 30 seconds to go off. I can run away from the... It puts out this big sphere of suspicion around
suspicion,
certain things.
Yes.
And so if you're outside of that, then people don't really suspect you.
Oh, yeah.
So you set the explosion going, run off to one side, it goes off, bump, this ring goes up. Everyone rushes to examine that. You nip over to the next thing, set the explosion on that, run off.
Yeah. See, I was sort of reflecting on this sort of thing, the whole idea of sneak 'em ups and stealth gameplay, and playing Assassin's Creed, and just thinking, yeah, actually, this is better than Thief. I mean, it's a heresy, I think, to many people listening, but Thief was very much about you're either hidden or you're seen and pretty much in trouble, and you've got to take really desperate measures to get clear. Whereas Assassin's Creed, it seems a lot more softer. You can be seen, you can get away with so much, and it's not game over if you're spotted. It just makes life a bit more difficult, and it's ideal to not be spotted, but if you just lose your rag and want to completely go mental with a sword, as I sometimes end up doing when I'm rescuing civilians in there, then that's all right too. It makes it a bit more of a challenging game, but it's not going to punish you massively for suddenly being
Assassin's Creed 2, always the idea in the back of your mind is... You know I'm the most powerful swordsman in this city. I know I'm the most powerful swordsman in this city. I'm going to kill any of you one-on-one. You're going to have to really pile onto me to kill me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, Thief is a different kind of gameplay, I suppose. Just the whole absolute patience required to get the stealth done properly.
There is a difference between a sneak 'em up to a... I don't know, what would we call it?
It's really almost a new genre, isn't it? Well, it's not really stealth. It's just being aware that some stuff has consequences and will make your life more difficult if you don't do it in a certain way. It's a sort of, I don't know, soft stealth. I don't know what you'd call it, but yeah.
We'll have to think about that.
I think, all right, come up with that, come on for that.
Interesting feature the Saboteur has, which is an awful lot of Ella Fitzgerald on the soundtrack.
Oh, excellent. It's got the period radio stations.
Yeah, the music's all brilliant. The thing I was going to mention was it's got 10 different perks which you work up. So basically, you
talents.
Yeah, sort of. You've got 10 different categories, each with 3 levels.
Yeah.
So, the first level might be kill 5 Nazis or whatever it was. And then, bump, you get level 1 of that.
Right.
And then it gives you an ability, like, you get... this weapon is unlocked the headquarters.
So a certain degree of customization there, perhaps sideways gameplay?
Not so much customization, it's progress. And so one of the ones I'm working through at the moment is get 10 double kills with a sniper rifle, which basically is shoot someone in his head and make sure the bullet then it ends up in the guy standing behind him.
It's quite specific. Yeah. Good trick if you can pull it off.
And once I get that, I get a special sniper rifle. One of the earlier ones was really reduced the amount of sway on the sniper.
I'm very much enjoying the sort of unlock bonus rewards. Not so much achievements in Saints Row, but the doing certain stuff lots well will get you stuff in game.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really care about my achievement score particularly. It's nice to be able to look at little badges and see what I've done, but stuff that unlocks and opens within the game itself.
Yeah, they could have given an achievement for getting 10 of these sniper kills.
Yeah, but instead they give you a better sniper rifle.
Yeah, that they encourage you to play it and run through the different types of gameplay there is.
Hmm.
There's the obligatory collect cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need a couple more Nazi vehicles, then I need to collect every single civilian car.
Trying stealing panzers that are occupied and things, is it?
I don't think you can steal the occupied ones, but you can steal them.
Right.
There's car racing, of course.
Of course.
But
sandbox game.
One of them happens to be the French Grand Prix. Because part of the plot, you have to run a race. Which is really quite good. The car mechanics are okay, not great.
I know what you mean. There's the Saints Row as well. It's good enough, but it's not super precise or
it's not a Forza or a Gran Turismo.
But then are you looking for that anyway?
No, you're looking for an arcade funny thing.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem I've got is you just clip a bit of a wall and run to a stop because you rammed a little bit sticking out from a wall, that sort of thing.
Clipping and such.
Yeah. I constantly drive around in my race car now.
Excellent.
Wouldn't you? Yeah,
absolutely.
You can ask for escape cars to be delivered and stuff, so I've set that to be my race car as well. Doesn't bat an eye.
Inconspicuous.
They do an interesting thing.
International super spy. Here's my card.
They do an interesting thing with unlocking the city.
Yeah.
Because you've got the different quarters and areas of Paris, and basically you have checkpoints. And until you have papers, you can't get past these checkpoints.
I see. So you earn the papers by liberating other areas.
Well, you earn the papers as part of the plot.
Yeah.
And then checkpoints go from red to yellow.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll actually let you through.
Can you get through them anyway?
Yeah.
And they just charge after you. Oh, I see. So it's a lot easier.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, several times I've come round the corner to a checkpoint, hit the handbrake, trying desperately to stop, only to stop just on the gate. Think, have I made it? To watch the gate go clunk and fall down very slowly.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple of seconds of amazement from all the Nazis.
Very Indiana Jones moment, yeah.
Then somebody blows a whistle and it all kicks off.
Brilliant.
Zeppelins.
Oh, it's got Zeppelins.
Zeppelin.
Oh, well, it's also automatically my best game of the year, then.
You can blow up every Zeppelin you see. And they explode in this most beautiful... cloud of...
Tripping fire and the rest of it, God.
I shot one right above me.
That was stupid.
No, it doesn't hurt you, unfortunately. Right. Just looking up, thinking, oh, yes, that burning Zeppelin's getting awfully close now, isn't it? Yeah.
Everything's better with Zeppelins.
Yeah, they are, yeah. In fact, there's a very Indiana Jones bit. In fact, there's just these throwaway Indiana Jonesian moments, like... you have to get this box, which is, everyone's sort of assuming is... well, I assumed it was some supernatural thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you didn't look in there, did you? No, good. And then never mentioned again.
Excellent.
Yeah, I really like it. It's brilliant. And it's a crying shame they shut down the studio just before it released.
Seems strange. So is it popular and doing well? I mean, you like it, obviously, but in general?
I don't think so, because it came out just the wrong time, just before Christmas, with no publicity.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And
pretty much word of mouth is the only reason I'd heard of it.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. It is just excellent.
So we recommend it. Go buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
So, yes, I think that's probably all the games I've played.
Yeah, all done.
Did I actually play any later at all?
Yeah, you were ill, weren't you, with your Space Plague or whatever it was.
Space Plague. I downloaded Torchlight.
Oh, yeah? You had a look at that yet?
No.
Nope.
Right. It was cheap on Steam, so I downloaded it.
Changed the skill in Eve?
Oh, I got my new sailboat
pod racer
in Eve. Yeah, it looks like a sailboat pod racer.
It does look very cool, but I imagine it's going to be... I imagine there's just going to be whole gangs of people roaming around and trying to suicide battleships.
I claimed it
them.
In Jita, which may have been a mistake.
Yeah, you never want to undock that, because you're just going to get people throwing away titans to kill it.
Yeah.
just to annoy you.
Yeah.
Do you not? Is it like a reclaimable thing? Or you
I don't think so.
You just get one ever.
I think it's just the one.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that's asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Isaac suiciding abounds. It does look cool, though. Oh. Animated textures on the sails and everything.
Yes. Also.
Yes.
I did play a bit of Modern Warfare 2 multiplayer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How's that working for you? Were you javelin exploited?
No, all that was fixed.
Good.
No, it was just horrific. It was horrible.
So, again, reminded of the vast gulf between your own seeming competency in solo mode.
I think they've made a mistake.
Yeah.
What they've done is they made it so it's really easy to level up even if you die. And so you start, play your first game, and boom, you're up. You see lots of level 40 to 50 people, and you think, oh, my God.
Yeah. You just have to keep zerging out there until you crank up enough XP to be competent.
But I think, basically, everyone's being dragged up to that level anyway because of the XP system. So it never looks like, when you start, that it's putting you in a fair game.
Oh, I
which
see.
Is possibly
going to... So it's a question of just for the first, 20 or 30 matches, really knuckle down and just die lots.
It could be a completely fair game.
Yeah.
But you can't tell because these people are moved up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know what the levels give you. Do they improve your stats? Do you have stats?
No, it's unlocks and whatnot.
Oh, okay. So they're likely
to... ability to customise your class and things.
So they're likely to have better gear than you, but...
Oh, yes, I have better gear.
But still capable. You're still just as good at aiming at them or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple of points when I was spawning and getting instantly killed by Harriers and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because people had... got kill streaks, got these things, and I'd just spawn again and again and again and get insta-killed.
Yeah, yeah. Also, it's a system that tends to reinforce success at the expense of people dying.
Yeah, I don't really enjoy it.
No.
No, but then again, it took me a while to enjoy the first one, so.
This would be the multiplayer specific.
This would be the multiplayer, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll have to play it a couple of times and see, but it's very harsh.
Yeah.
I really don't think that most players stick around for the multiplayer. Out of the 8 million, whatever it sold.
Yeah, but then
8 million people aren't going to play multiplayer.
But then it's got a very short single player story.
I know. I think that may be a problem for it, and I think a lot of people might be quite disappointed.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
When it comes to DLC time, well, if how many people are still engaged.
Oh, DLC will just be the multiplayer maps. So.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, that's all the games I played.
Right. Excellent. You want to do the Twitter question?
Yeah, we can do a Twitter question if you want.
Okey-dokey. What did I ask?
There you go.
Ooh, give me a mouse. Is that going to reach from over here?
It's a wireless mouse.
Well, yeah, but there's like things in the way and the wires might have,
the
wireless
the cable's might have to invisible.
Okay. okay, liking the Lotro NPC henchman, I forgot to put the word you in there. What would you set a henchman up to do and what abilities would they have? Here we go. Got Sean MC74. I want a henchman that can bring me beer when I'm playing.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Some mistake in there. A minion to hold my cape at a jaunty angle at all times and avert jet intake embarrassment. Yeah.
That's vitally important.
Definitely comic book henchman there. We got Pete Walker 74. I'd gravitate toward a solo friendly class, so I'd want my brother in arms to be a heal bot so that I could go stomp in an instance. It's pretty much what I've done with mine in Lotreia, my herbalist. The herbalist is the one you'll want there if you're some kind of tank or warrior there. Eric's chair, so far I really like the tanking henchman. He could have a better AI. Sometimes he just stands around or gets stuck in a wall. Yeah, I've noticed my herbalist occasionally not really pitching in as I'd like. They seem to be, sometimes they get a bit distracted and disengage. I don't know how to fix that. You can use the attack my target button. Although that's got a very long cooldown, hasn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it's like once every 5 minutes or something.
And it's not really a command, it is definitely a suggestion.
Yeah, yeah. So I think pathing might be the issue there. I found that if I just back up and make sure I'm a lot nearer to the henchmen, they tend to heal, they get back on the case and heal. So yeah, I just imagine they'll be tweaking that kind of stuff as they go. Let's see what else we got. Dr. Turag there. Henchmen are generally set up cheaply as fodder to my will. Their deaths mean nothing or less than nothing. Excellent tyrantism there.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a word, tyrantism?
It is now.
Fine. Fantastic. Ackley, I'd make henchmen support units only. Buffers, crowd controllers, perhaps heals. Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of standard group dynamics. If you're leading from the front, it makes it much easier for AIs. And something I find in Guild Wars a lot is if you're a backline caster, it's generally a bit more difficult to manage the heroes and henchmen than if you're up front going in as the warrior.
Yeah.
Because they tend to respond a lot more, as you'd expect. Kuznik 2000, they should have personal storylines so you can develop deep relationships with them. And he's got a winky smiley there. So we're talking the Old Republic here. Go away, I want to spend some time alone with my henchmen. Yes. And Sentak, never toyed with the Lotro henchmen. Can they actually walk in a straight line? Yes, often not the straight line that you'd plot for them, but that's what I need mine to do first. Yeah. No, they are very good, actually. They're for what? Spin dropped in, a whole sudden new feature. I mean, I'm expecting they'll be tweaked, adjusted, refined over the coming months, but as a first offering, they're very good. I'm quite impressed. So yeah, that's all we had for that one. I should probably try asking less specific stuff in future.
Yes, you need to have more scope for people to have comedy answers as well.
Absolutely. And we also should probably pimp our Twitter handles a bit more. I am at Van Hemlock.
And I am at John Shute, without an H in the John, because that's how weird people spell it.
Fair enough. You can find that on the vanhemlock.com site as well, show notes, etc.
And
put links.
There probably won't be a Twitter question on Friday this week.
No, we're going to give it all a bit of a rest for a few weeks over the holiday period and just do some... What are we doing next week? What's our show?
We're
not doing topic, are we?
We're going to do our end of the year.
Is it the end
review
of the year next week?
Yes.
Okay, we'll be doing that. And then I think the week after, or is that an extra show for the music?
No, the music's an extra show, which I really must finish. Which I'll put out sometime before New Year.
Our yearly mixtape.
Yeah, so basically the idea is your New Year's party is you can play the mixtape one and wow all of your non-gaming friends with the amazing music.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll be recording over the Christmas period, but can't guarantee particular days or release schedules. And yes, anything else? I've forgotten to mention.
You could pimp the website.
I did several times. www.vanhemlock.com.
Yes.
Your go-to place for, well, this podcast.
We should try and expand a bit. And you can leave us an audio comment there.
Yes, please do with those. We'd love to hear from you, literally hear from you.
Yeah. And what else do we need to pimp?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Run out of stuff.
So much stuff that needs pimping. Oh, and you can catch us on Xbox Live.
Yeah, I'm Van Hemlock there as well, with a space and capital V. Capital
and I'm Senyek with an S.
Yeah, and do send me a message before inviting to games as well, because often I have obscure playtimes or reasons why I might want to finish a solo thing first before I get all spoiled.
And please, in the your about info, put your name in, because I keep forgetting who's who.
So many names.
I know. Yes.
Keeping track of it all.
Yes, I'm also Senyek on Steam.
Oh, I don't log into Steam enough to be worth telling anyone what that is. I'm Vrishik or in DDO, and I'm not even going to bother spelling that. You can work out the pronunciations yourself. But we've
got quite a
big old following in there at the moment. We play Fridays 8 o'clock UK time, and generally have a big old romp and enjoy ourselves quite a lot. And that's open to all comers, really. Do say hello if you've got a DDO character on
there.
Okay.
Do you want to do the board?
Oh, go on then. Let's get this whiteboard out of the way. Right, he's written on... Right, we've got Gears of War on Top Gear. I guess that's...
We did that last week. Right. Okay. Yeah.
He's written two columns, one with John at the top and one with Tim at the top. And in the John column, he's got the guy from How 2.
Yeah.
He's got the woman from Game Face. And he's got He What Wrote Father Ted.
And what's in the Tim column?
In the Tim column, there's nothing at all. Now, do you want to explain what this is?
These are the famous people who've talked to me on Twitter.
Yes, and I don't have anyone famous following me, apparently. No, I have hundreds of famous followers because everyone who follows me on Twitter is famous in their own way.
I hate you.
And on that, see you next time.
What do you want to do? What we learnt this week?
Oh, what did we do? Oh, yeah, all right. Okay, I learnt that Audrey Hepburn is awesome with a grenade launcher and a slung assault rifle.
And I learnt that no matter where you are in France, you can see the Eiffel Tower.
And definitely on that, see you next time.
Goodbye.
I just wanted to wish you guys and your listeners, of course, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Take it easy during the holidays and do play lots of games and drink some eggnog or whatever it is you do drink over there in Britannia. And I'm looking forward to see you guys in the next year, and it will be interesting to see what you can bring us. Cheers.